December 2002, 3 days after Christmas. White tourists edge nervously through a Columbus neighborhood, their eyes scanning telephone wires where shoes dangle like strange ornaments. To them, those shoes mean drugs, danger, territory. To those who live here, they might be a memorial, a young basketball player recently shot, someone whose name deserves to be remembered. Tonight, everyone's heading to Value City Arena, where LeBron James and his Akron team will face Columbus's Brookhaven Wildcats. The crowd will outnumber an Ohio State game played earlier that day. This isn't just basketball. It's about who gets witnessed, who gets remembered, and who decides what stories matter. When Michigan's Fab Five stormed onto courts in the early 1990s, bald heads gleaming, black socks pulled high, baggy shorts swaying, white commentators labeled these details threatening rather than celebratory. Their hand gestures became menacing instead of community vocabulary that fluent speakers understood instinctively. Growing up black in America means watching people fear the very things that make you feel at home, the colorful bandanas, the fresh haircuts, the airbrushed jean jackets memorializing lost friends. There's intimacy in how we present ourselves. An older brother cutting hair with precision in a cramped bathroom, careful attention paid beneath a brightly stitched kufi. Michael Jordan's baldness became iconic, but he was never cooler than in 1985, thinning hair, gold chains, soaring from the free throw line in band sneakers. When white America tried to tame the Fab Five's flourish, it only intensified love from those who recognized themselves in that refusal to shrink. Bruce Howard never forgot a face. He'd find you in the grocery store, extend his hand, ask if you were staying out of trouble. Not just his players, but everyone. When he took over Brookhaven in 1992, he built something rare: family first, academics second, basketball third. By the early 2000s, the city's best players chose Brookhaven, even if it meant less playing time, wanting to be part of something larger than individual glory. The Columbus City League's magic came from geography. Schools clustered in the city's four corners, accessible by bus, defined by neighborhood pride, yet close enough to create fleeting dynasties. Brookhaven's era meant sacrifice. People who couldn't afford tickets found money. Kids spent Christmas cash on outfits, all to witness history. When Howard coughed blood during a tournament in Orlando in January 2003, just weeks after Brookhaven nearly beat LeBron's team, rumors spread. At a game, the announcer asked for prayers. An older man placed his gold-ringed hand on a young shoulder. "It's going to be okay," making it clear for the first time that it might not be. Howard died of liver failure less than a month later. Brookhaven lost the state championship. The heart doesn't break all at once. It accumulates pain until it can shield us no longer. Humans make gods of men because we need deities who actually respond. There's a difference between begging and praying. Both require belief in someone who might care, despite having their hands full. But it's easier to make gods of the living, people who at least answer for their actions. Nike's 2006-2007 We Are All Witnesses campaign for LeBron James understood this perfectly. Black t-shirts with "witness" across the chest, commercials showing LeBron dunking in slow motion to Marianne Williams' gospel version of "I Shall Be Released." The message? Believe at NikeBasketball.com. Cleveland built a church in their arena, God literally in the architecture. LeBron's pregame ritual became communion. He'd clap chalk-covered hands, creating a small white cloud bursting from his fingers. Fans mimicked this at home, creating tributary clouds throughout the city, a shared ritual showing how a city moves alongside you. Biblical witnessing means spreading the gospel, and Cleveland fans did exactly that. When we see something that defies belief, we search for greater meaning, something divine that might respond if we knock loudly enough. When LeBron's 2010 departure loomed, Cleveland fans wavered between acceptance and denial. Then came We Are LeBron, a desperate plea featuring local anchors, politicians, even Ohio's governor. The song balanced self-awareness and sincerity, echoing every soul ballad. No one will love you like we do. In relationships between people and places, the outcome was inevitable. He was always leaving. The politics of place aren't about staying. They're about knowing where to find shelter, where memories live at street level. Few things match the intimacy of decades-long history between a person and a place. On decision night, Cleveland men set LeBron jerseys ablaze, numbers burning like separate countries collapsing. The crowd grew, feeding the fire while shouting betrayal. When a microphone caught one ragged face, the declaration came, "He's dead to me." What haunts most, everyone circling those flames was white. The sentiment wasn't wishing LeBron dead, but declaring him dead to them. He served a purpose, displeased them, so he ceased to exist. Fire is a type of song too, arriving after the begging stops. Fall 2004 brought handcuffs and a holding cell. An older black man offered reassurance. "Whatever they do to you, they gonna do to all of us." Not, "We got your back," but, "No one here suffers alone." Similar, but distinctly different. Later at the workhouse, he gave away a Bible without sharing his name. You might need this in the early days. A jail cell becomes both kingdom and church, depending on your bid. Territory depended on tenure or fights won. At night, shooting balled-up white socks toward the ceiling, imagining an orange rim with a fresh net, counting shots until one dream became another. What haunts most is being seen by someone who knew you as a child, now through prison glass. When a brother visited in 03, he looked afraid for the first time. The jail's thick glass created infinite reflections, where faces merged, both afraid of the same thing, both carrying different shames. After getting out, survival becomes simplification. Get a job, rent a room, eat once a day, write at night, stay out of trouble. Don't try to scale your mountain of shame all at once. Find something to lose yourself in. Game 7 of the 2016 NBA Finals was tied at 89-89 with 2 minutes left, when Andre Iguodala grabbed a rebound and sprinted into what looked like a two-on-one fast break. LeBron was already there, accelerating down the sideline, then accelerating beyond his already considerable speed. The chase down block is timing, math, and audacious belief. When Kyrie Irving faced Stephen Curry at 59 seconds, the shot looked good from the moment it left his hand. That haphazard rainbow fell through the net. The story ends as you've seen it. In a city adorned with flowers, golden smoke puffing into summer skies, all curses broken. Cleveland walked its streets that night, ravenous for residual joy, a reminder that some debts do get paid, some prayers do get answered, and sometimes the people who never left get to witness their own redemption.